Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is episode 195 of Paranormal Stories. This week I'm talking about birthmarks that relate to children's past life memories. Imagine a four-year-old boy in rural India who insists that he remembers being shot in the chest. His parents are baffled until they notice a large, discoloured birthmark in the very spot he points to. Later, researchers discover that a man in a neighbouring village died years earlier from a gunshot wound in exactly the same place. Stories like this sound like the stuff of folklore, but for more than half a century, they've been the subject of painstaking research at the University of Virginia. The late psychiatrist, Dr. Ian Stevenson, and his successor, Dr. Jim B. Tucker, have collected over 2,500 cases of children who claim to remember previous lives. Among the most striking of these reports are the children born with birthmarks or birth defects that appear to match the injuries, wounds, or distinctive features of the individuals they claim to have been. This is not fringe material from an obscure paranormal society. Stevenson, a respected academic, spent decades documenting and cross-checking witness testimonies, medical records, and photographs. His goal was not to prove reincarnation outright, but to argue that these cases warranted serious scientific attention. Ian Stevenson was not a mystic or guru. Trained in psychiatry and deeply steeped in the language of science, he came to the question of reincarnation reluctantly. What first interested him was not metaphysics, but reports he heard from India, Sri Lanka, and elsewhere of children making detailed claims about former lives. In 1961, he published his first paper on the subject, and soon after, he began travelling widely, interviewing families, photographing birthmarks, and trying to match children's statements with actual historical individuals. He demanded corroboration. If a child claimed to have lived in a certain town, Stevenson travelled there. If a child insisted they died from a gunshot wound, Stephen tried to find the death certificate, police report, or autopsy. If the child had a birthmark in that very place, he documented it meticulously. The work culminated in 1997 with his two-volume magnum opus, Reincarnation and Biology, a contribution to the etiology of birthmarks and birth defects. Spanning more than 2,200 pages, it includes hundreds of cases with medical records, photographs, and eyewitness testimonies. For Stevenson, these cases were not proof of reincarnation, but they were something almost as important, data that could not be explained away easily. Among Stevenson's most dramatic cases was a boy from Turkey, born with deformed fingers on his right hand. As soon as he could speak, the boy claimed to remember the life of a man from a nearby village who had been killed by a shotgun blast at close range. Stevenson investigated. Witnesses confirmed that the man the boy identified had indeed died from such a wound. More remarkably, the man had lost fingers in the fatal attack, fingers corresponding exactly to the boy's congenital deformity. This was not a faint resemblance, Stevenson emphasised, but a striking one. The injury in life and the defect at birth mirrored each other in size, shape, and location. For Stevenson, it was a textbook example of how a trauma in one life might echo into another. One of Stevenson's cases from India involved a boy with a long, pale mark stretching across his chest. What made this mark unusual, according to Stevenson, was not only its size, but its irregular shape. Unlike a typical birthmark, which might be circular or roughly uniform, this mark appeared jagged, almost as if it followed the trajectory of a sharp object. When the boy began to speak, he told his parents that he had once been a man killed in a dispute in a nearby village, and that he'd been struck with a sword. Stevenson's field investigators interviewed relatives of the deceased man, who confirmed that he had indeed died from a slashing wound. The trajectory of the blade matched the jagged birthmark in both length and orientation. What sets this case apart was not only the visual correspondence, but the behavioural echoes. The boy occasionally flinched as if he were living the strike, recoiling when someone mimicked a swinging motion, and sometimes protected the mark instinctively. Family members reported that he would avoid sharp objects or sudden movements near his chest, as if still guarding against a blade he had once encountered. Stevenson meticulously documented these behaviours, noting that they were consistent, repeatable, and spontaneous, not prompted by parents or caretakers. To him, this suggested that the mark was more than a physical anomaly. It was a link between memory and the body, an indelible imprint of a life that had ended long before the child was born. In Burma, Stevenson documented a case of a girl born with mottled, scar-like marks across her torso and arms. From the age of 3, she exhibited unusual behaviours. She avoided fire, screamed at the sight of flames, and sometimes spontaneously described being trapped in a burning house. Stevenson's team investigated local records and discovered that a woman from the area had perished in a house fire several years before the child's birth. The child's birthmarks mirrored the burns, with blotches and discoloration patterns that corresponded to the injuries the woman had suffered. The girl also displayed behavioural and psychological echoes. She shivered at the smell of smoke, insisted on staying away from cooking fires, and sometimes cried at night, recounting in detail how flames had engulfed her previous home. Neighbours recalled hearing the child refer to objects that had belonged to the deceased woman, like a particular chest and a collection of clay pots, which she could describe with precision despite never having seen them in her current life. Stevenson emphasised that the combination of memory, behaviour, and physical evidence made this case one of the most compelling in his files. The birthmarks were not merely coincidental, they were a visual and tactile reminder of the previous life, present from birth and manifesting alongside vivid, verifiable memories. Perhaps one of the most extraordinary cases involved a boy in Lebanon, born with a deformation of his skull, a deep indentation on the right side of his head, as if part of his cranium had been crushed. From the age of 2, he began speaking about a life in which he was a mechanic who had been struck on the head with a heavy instrument, describing the blow and ensuing injury with astonishing specificity. Stevenson's investigation revealed that a man in a nearby town had indeed died from a similar head injury, caused by a fall during a workplace accident. The site of the injury and the child's indentation corresponded not only in general location, but also in approximate size and contour. The boy exhibited behaviours that reinforced the case's authenticity. He flinched when objects fell near his head, held his hands to the indentation as if recalling pain, and displayed a persistent fear of heights and heavy tools. Family members reported that he avoided climbing ladders or using hammers, even in play, in ways that seemed disproportionately cautious for his age, as if his instincts were shaped by memories from the previous life. Stevenson documented this case over months, noticing the child's spontaneous speech, detailed recollections of the deceased man's life, and consistency over time. The combination of physical anomaly, psychological echo, and factual accuracy regarding the deceased individual made it one of the most convincing head wound cases in his research. Stevenson's files contain dozens of other cases with similarly striking correspondences. In one, a boy in Sri Lanka was born with a small circular birthmark on his chest. From age 3, he insisted he had been a man who died from a gunshot wound to the chest during a robbery. Investigators traced the story to a man in the nearby town who had died in precisely that way. The birthmark's shape and location corresponded to the entry wound of the fatal bullet. In another case from Lebanon, a child was born with a deep, vertical scar-like mark on the leg. As he grew, he recounted being a man killed with a sword in a local feud. Stevenson and his team interviewed family members of the deceased who confirmed the story. The mark mirrored the fatal wound in both orientation and size. Other cases included children with malformed ears corresponding to injuries from previous lives, children with cleft palates recalling lives of individuals who had suffered facial trauma, and children with missing fingers who provided detailed accounts of violent deaths that matched the absent digits. Each case added another layer to Stevenson's growing compendium of anomalies, building a body of evidence that he believed could not be dismissed lightly. After Stevenson's retirement, Dr. Jim Tucker took over the research program at UVA. Unlike Stevenson, who travelled widely in Asia and the Middle East, Tucker began collecting American cases. This was important because the skeptics often argued that children in cultures where reincarnation is a common belief were more likely to produce such stories. Of course, not everyone has been convinced. Skeptics argue that birthmarks are common, and with billions of people in the world, coincidences are inevitable. They point out that memories can be influenced by suggestion, by overheard stories, or by cultural expectations. Yet Stevenson's defenders counter that some of the birthmarks and defects are highly unusual, like the boy born with only stubs where his fingers should be, or the child with a long sword-shaped mark on his chest, or the girl with burns that mirror a fatal fire. In many cases, Stevenson documented that the child's physical anomaly was present from birth, before they were old enough to make claims about past lives. One curious feature of these cases is how the memories fade. Most children begin speaking about their past lives between the ages of 2 and 4, but by the time they reach 7 or 8, the memories typically diminish or disappear. Stevenson speculated that as children grow more firmly rooted in their present identities, the traces of a past life are overwritten. This fading also complicates research, since by the time investigators arrive, the child may have forgotten key details. It also suggests that whatever process is at work is tied to early childhood development, rather than being a constant across the lifespan. Stevenson never claimed to have proved reincarnation. Instead, he said he had documented anomalous phenomena that strongly suggested survival of consciousness. His work remains polarizing, celebrated by some, dismissed by others, but it has carved out a unique niche in scientific literature. Jim Tucker has continued the work into the 21st century, publishing for both professional and popular audiences and reminding us that the mystery persists. Children around the world still whisper stories of lives they should not know, and sometimes their bodies bear marks that seem to testify to those stories. Whether one believes in reincarnation or not, the phenomenon Stevenson and Tucker documented is more than a curiosity. It forces us to confront the limits of science's current explanations. It asks whether memory is solely a product of the brain, or whether it might have dimensions we have yet to understand. The enduring legacy of Stevenson and Tucker's work is not certainty but wonder. The children with their memories and their birthmarks compel us to pause and reconsider what it means to be human, what it means to live, and what it means to die. In the end, perhaps the most scientific response is not to believe or disbelieve, but to keep listening, to keep recording the whispers of children who speak of another life, and to keep noticing the quiet signatures written on their skin. Because if even one of their stories is true, then the line between death and life is not a wall, but a door. Today I was talking about birthmarks linked to children's past life memories. My book on verified near-death experiences is out now on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or on Kindle. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.